Yeah, so my hiring manager, I want to challenge him or her, but they always say, no, but we're looking for the best. We're just hiring the best. And I don't know what to do then, because they have already a picture in their mind of what is, yeah, this is in their perception, the best.
My name is Katharina, and I'm the community and event manager at eCulture, a company that is on a mission to shape the world of unbiased hiring. Welcome to the Oops, I'm Biased podcast. Today on the Oops, I'm Biased podcast, I'm speaking to Sasha Martina. Sasha Martina is a recruitment professional, a two times entrepreneur, a consultant, a keynote speaker on all things D&I. She has recently made a new step in her career and launched House of Inclusion, a D&I consultancy, and has previously worked 12 years in recruitment, both on the internal but also on the agency side. So she has a wealth of knowledge that she's going to share with us on this episode. This is the first TA Leaders Live that we did. So you'll be hearing us talk on the podcast. It was first live broadcasted, now brought to you as an episode. And we're going to talk all about inclusive recruitment. We're going to touch on all different things regarding building your business case if you are working on a little bit of change management in your organization, about leadership development, as well as leadership involvement in making recruitment more inclusive. And then in the end, she also shares some really tangible tips that cost you nothing, are little steps that you can take tomorrow already to make sure that your organization becomes more diverse, equitable, and inclusive in their recruitment processes and beyond. So I'm really excited to bring you this conversation. Without further ado, here is Sasha Martina. All right, we are live. Hey, Sasha, welcome to the podcast. It is so great to have you today.
Hello, Kat. I always say Kat, I'm sorry. Hello, Katharina.
That's perfect.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I hope you're doing well too. This is our very first Talent Leaders Live. We have been running a Talent Leader series on this podcast for a little bit, but thought we would take it live. And that's what we're doing today, which I'm very excited about to have you on this. We are talking all about inclusive recruitment today and hear a little bit about what you got going on as well. Maybe we can start with that. Give us a bit of an introduction to who you are and what it is that you do.
A lot. I do a lot, but I have been active in the international recruitment industry for over 12 years. Started a business called Your Talent Agency that focuses on international recruitment and relocation management. And since of last year, I've launched a new label, which is called House of Inclusion, in which we help companies build and get better in inclusivity and diversity from the inside out. And next to that, I'm a public speaker. I speak a lot about the topics under the umbrella of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I can go on and on and on and on. But I think those are the most important things for now to know.
Nice. I had a quick look on your LinkedIn and saw that you have, as you say, over 12 years of experience in recruitment. Seven of those are in entrepreneurship, running your own agencies. What was your first sort of introduction to recruitment, and what's the passion around it for you?
Ooh, so my first introduction was right after my graduation. So I studied international fashion management, but when I graduated, it was 2009-ish, and the fashion industry was, like the rest of the world, in total crisis. So there were almost no proper jobs on the market. I already had like an internship sort of part-time job at a consultancy, IT consultancy agency, where I did everything from HR to picking up the phone to bringing the post around. Back then, people still send a lot of post. But I loved the HR recruitment part most. I was like, oh, this is magical. Every time people came in, and then the people that had the interviews, the hiring managers were I don't know, they were for me sort of magical in how they looked at their candidates and how they quickly decided if it was a match or not. And I already felt very drawn to that. So they advised me to just put my CV on back then Monster Board. Monster Board. And I got like so many reactions. I talked to a lot of agencies and eventually I just picked the one that felt best. And started on the World Trade Center in Amsterdam, working for an agency there. So that was my first touch base with recruitment. And I just fell in love with the profession because every time you can make so many people happy, you can make your clients happy, you make your candidates happy, you make yourself happy. And so every time I found a new layer of interest, and I saw throughout those 12 years, all different sides of the table, from startup to scale up to corporate to freelancing to high volume to very complex roles. I think, I touched base on almost everything throughout the years.
Yeah, that's very fascinating to have that experience of seeing from different perspectives of the table how that profession and that field goes. I think that makes you makes a wealth of knowledge that you have and experience. Somewhere along the line, D&I came into the picture for you, because I don't think that it was a focus for you from the outset. How did that happen?
No, it wasn't. But also I learned looking back that the wording about diversity, equity and inclusion are still pretty new for most people. So all of a sudden it's there and it's all over your timeline. But if you asked 3 to 5 years ago, I don't think a lot of people even knew the existence of the words. And looking back, I think it's always been like a red thread throughout my life and throughout my career, speaking up for those who couldn't speak up for themselves, fighting harder for the candidates who came from a minority background, challenging my hiring managers into speaking to other types of candidates and not looking at educational levels, or not just focusing on the fact that somebody didn't speak Dutch, for example. So if I look back, I think it's always been there. But the real trigger for me to start focusing more and more on it started about 3 years ago.
Nice. Yeah. You say such an apt thing of saying, well, D&I in its conception now is quite a new thing. It's been around for a while in different contexts, but it's nice that we can label it now and sort of put a name to what we're trying to do. I think that is wonderful.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which leads me quite nicely into what this podcast is about and this TA Leader Series is about: inclusive recruitment. Could you give me your own definition of what inclusive recruitment is, and then maybe also explain a little bit what it means to you?
Of course. So for me, because I think if you ask 10 people, you will get 10 different answers, but I hope there's a lot of overlap in the way people answer this. I think inclusive recruitment and inclusive recruitment processes are really about taking the candidate as a central point and making sure that everything is guided and created in the terms of a candidate, making sure that they have a safe and good experience. So in the past, we talked about candidate experience is very important. And it was more from a perspective of, do we make sure that they get informed in time? Do they get a proper follow-up call or follow-up email? But nothing about how do we make sure everybody gets the same opportunity, the same treatment. And we think about how do we make everybody feel safe from the start. I think that's a sort of deeper layer that we're now discovering and we're touching upon. For me, inclusive recruitment is all about that. So that makes sure everybody that goes into your process also leaves as an ambassador, because obviously you cannot hire everybody. How do you make sure that they will always talk about you in a positive sense? And that's also because of the experience they had. And if they felt like I have been treated exactly the same, like all my competitors, and it's not everybody comes from a certain group or a certain studies, or it's a friend of the hiring manager, or, well, we all know the examples of where you know in your gut feel like this has not been a fair process. And inclusive recruitment is all about building the fair as possible processes so that the candidate feels safe and not disencouraged for the future of their career.
Yeah. What I hear you say is inclusive recruitment has a lot to do with equal opportunities, candidate experience, and then also you mentioned something around psychological safety, making sure that the candidate feels safe and understood in who they are in that process. How have you, on both sides of the table, as a recruiter, but also maybe as an agency, or internal recruiter, but also as an external one, how have you made that happen? What have you sort of seen work in your experience?
It's really about taking the extra step, taking the extra mile. And for me personally, it was more convincing the hiring side, so hiring management side. Also, in my case, a lot of times my clients' hiring management, that you really had to show their perspective of how it is from the eyes of a candidate who are already nervous even going into the process. Especially people who come from a minority background know that the chances are not always, are more against them than for them. So they come with a different, baggage of expectations maybe. And a hiring manager plays such a big role in creating that psychological safety and making sure that people feel safe and secure to share, and also feeling treated equal. So for me, it started a lot with talking to my hiring managers, challenging them on almost trying to look through other person's perspectives, which is very difficult. I always compare it a little bit with privileges, right? Mm. If you have it, you're not aware of it. But if you don't have it, you are very aware that other people have it. And that is almost what happens in a lot of times with the recruitment processes as well, that hiring managers think, they will understand, or it's not such a big deal, and candidates feel, I have a lot of like very heavy, horrible stories of how people get so insecure because of how they have been treated in the past. So I think it's very important if you are a recruiter, or if you are in HR and you know, because everybody knows, that you sort of educate your managers and challenge them as well in growing in this field, because it's really about growing and learning to see the other side.
Yeah, that's a really good summary. We recently had someone on the podcast as well who was talking a lot about stakeholder management and saying, well, you need to educate, but also listen to your hiring managers and say, okay, can we have that trust basis where I can challenge you on what you assume or your stereotypes that you have or what you think is a good process, where we can work together making it more fair, making it more inclusive. So happy to hear as well that is sort of at the forefront for you, that education piece.
And it's difficult because hiring managers a lot of times are people with the power position. And they also believe that they, got there or they deserve that position, and therefore they have their vision is valued. But that doesn't always mean it's true. And it's the right thing to always implement with each of the processes that you roll out. So something that you may recognize is and I know this because a lot of recruiters ask me as well. So my hiring manager, I want to challenge him or her, but they always say, no, but we're looking for the best. We're just hiring the best. And I don't know what to do then, because they have already a picture in their mind of what is, this is in their perception the best. So a good piece of advice could be to make them look from the other perspective and ask them, like, but who decides what is best? Because if it's you, and together with you, it's four people who sort of are in that same bubble of equality there. Somebody that looks a little bit different or is a little bit different will not be the best in your eyes. But if you ask me and I create that sort of baseline of what is best, you will get a different answer. So again, it's also a nice conversation to challenge them a little bit on diversity in their hiring processes and in their in their recruitment team of people who do the interviews and also the people who check the assessments. If you switch it up, you will get different results. So it's a really nice way to play around maybe a little bit with it without taking it too heavy. If you want to showcase to your managers that there are different ways and different perspectives.
Yeah. Yeah. That diversity of perspectives can change a lot. What would you then, or maybe in your experience, how do you take it to a second step then, as you say, well, if you challenge your hiring managers to think, well, your perspective on a candidate of what is a good quality candidate might be very different to what I see. What's the next step then? How do you make sure that you give that fair chance to everyone in the hiring decision when it comes to it?
Yeah, so it will really depend on the type of company that you work for. So in my experience, the smaller the company, the easier it sometimes is to find that hiring manager who is a little bit adventurous, maybe more an ambassador already of the recruitment team. And also a lot of times these are people who like to, yeah, I don't know, color outside of the lines a little mm-hmm. bit. But those are the good ones to find and just, you know, ask them like, hey, how can we maybe create like a side process as a proof of concept instead of changing the whole process and making sure that the leadership is involved? It takes time because everybody needs to say yes. And then by the time you get there, you are already exhausted and frustrated. And if you can prove that it is working by building a little proof of concept case with one manager and say like, hey, listen, why don't we for the next role, we switch up the process. So we co-create a new job spec. We check on inclusive language. We let it check by other people internally, maybe even externally. And we also together form a new hiring squad and see what are those results going to give us. So it's like a tiny project within the normal recruitment process. And obviously keep track and report. But a lot of times this builds a really good business case. So without having to get a lot of budget and a lot of people saying yes to it, if you find one that is willing to be maybe a little bit naughty in this process with you, that's going to help you a lot because then you have proven already on a small level that this is going to work. What happens if we roll it out on a bigger level?
Yeah, sort of think big, start small with a proof of concept with maybe one partner in crime in your organization.
Yeah, and that's also, I know sometimes it's challenging. People, I still feel a lot of recruiters feel like, hey, I need to, they feel a lot of times that they still have to listen too much to what the hiring managers say or demand or want. And I hope that more and more recruiters are going to see that without you, the company can't develop and can't grow. You are such a big part of the success. You're the first person that a lot of candidates see and speak to. So you're also sort of the gatekeeper and therefore you have a big role into play, like who's coming in and who's not. And if you want to build that equality basis, it basically starts with you.
Yeah, I love that appeal to all recruiters. It starts with you. You have a more important role than companies might lead you to believe. Exactly. Let's assume that proof of concept goes through. It's successful. People are enjoying it. How do you get leadership on board? How do you get them involved?
Yeah, leadership is always a fun challenge, right? And again, I think every company has different rules and regulations and challenges when it comes to involving leadership. But it is one of the biggest feedback points that we get when we talk about building more inclusive cultures and inclusive processes is, yes, everybody wants to, especially people from the operational side, especially people from HR and recruitment. But how do we make sure that it also comes from the top? And I don't have one perfect answer. I'm sorry. I wish I had. It's layered. And again, I always tap into people's sort of bravery in this. So feel bold and brave enough to step to step to the leaders yourself. You don't always have to follow the processes that have been laid out, because I can tell you by own experience, a lot of times leadership love it when people take initiative, especially if it's only going to help them, you know, reach their goals quicker or better. So obviously I don't have to tell you, but maybe still people listening don't know yet. A lot of times leaders get really triggered by better results. So we're going to be quicker. We're going to have more access to talent, quicker access to talent. It's amazing for our reputation. So it only has basically positive outcomes. But yes, we need to start doing it, and you need to start helping me with that by being an ambassador, by being an ally, by also showing up to initiatives like anything D&I related internally, which I think is an important point to mention. I see an amazing trend that more and more companies are willing to invest in the right products, software. They invest in speakers, workshops. So a lot is happening. But what you also see is that the people that actually need to be there, so leadership, 9 out of 10 times think, oh, somebody from HR can handle this, or I'm not needed here because I already know what to do. They just need to learn, and then, you know, the rest of the organization will follow. And that's a huge blind spot. Because most of the time, the higher you come, the more blind spots there are, and the more privileged people are, and therefore are not always aware of the little things that they can also do by making sure that that the processes and the culture becomes equal.
Yeah, I see that that's probably one of the biggest pain points for recruiters and HR professionals, and saying, well, it's always pushed down towards us to say, well, if we need to learn or adopt something new, it's you guys, it's not leadership that needs to spearhead that. Do you think sustainable change towards more D&I-informed processes can only come bottom-up? And are they the most successful, or have you seen it the other way as well, where you have a leader who is the champion of it? And how would that go?
I've seen both, but bottom up only works if there is at least some involvement from leadership. So a lot of what we see more with bigger corporates is that from bottom up, they just arrange budget or get budget and decide what they're going to spend it on. And after they've built the business case internally, they showcase it, and leadership is like, oh, amazing, thank you for doing this. So they've been a little bit in the naughty route. They just did it and then explained later why they thought it was an amazing idea. But you also obviously have companies where it is a bit more hierarchical, and they have to go through certain status and phases to get approval. It just takes longer a lot of times. If it doesn't come from within, from the intrinsic motivation at the leadership level, a lot of times these successes fail, or they don't have the impact that they could have. So yeah, I don't think there's a perfect answer for it. These things take time. I do really see that there's a different type of leader. How do you say that? Getting more and more territory, winning more territory. So especially more in the startup and scale-up domain, and maybe it's a generational thing as well. There's different kinds of leaderships, and they're growing, and they're outperforming a lot of other companies. And corporates are looking at them as well, because they're like, what? How can they build something this successful in such a short amount of time with such less resources than we have? So the bigger the company is, the more difficult it becomes to change a culture. And also, that's what inclusivity has everything to do with culture. So start early, and don't, I think especially for leaders, if you're a leader of a bigger company, don't feel disencouraged, because I don't think it's ever too late, but it will take maybe a little bit more from you and the rest of your team to get there. And just make sure you are present, that you're visible, that you're active, and that you're speaking up and speaking out. Yeah, I think all of those things are not a lot of work, but will make a big change.
Yeah, that role model function for senior people in companies is really important, especially if we're then talking about from the perspective of a recruiter. It's much easier if you can identify one of those champions higher up in the tree, as it were, and then partner with those to get your business case up and running, and then to, well, hopefully escalate that up into leadership. But yeah,
exactly.
All easier said than done. As you say, it's probably a long road to get there. I think a key part in this that I would love to talk to you about is leadership development. You talked about there's a new kind of leader on the rise, a new kind of leadership style. What exactly is that, and how does leadership development play into D&I initiatives then?
Yeah, so the D&I, and I would say more maybe inclusive leadership in this case, the new kind of leader is somebody who is not scared to be vulnerable, is not scared to showcase mistakes, and is super eager to learn instead of just saying, hey, we've always done it this way, or listen, I'm very aware of my privileges. You see that there's a very different sound coming from them where they say, oh my God, there's so much to learn. I didn't know. I'm becoming more and more aware of my own bubble, of my own privileges, and I really want to do better. And if they make a mistake, they will say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. How can I do better next time? So yeah, it's a world of difference, and it's not just applying to men or women. I think it goes across all genders, but we see definitely in the newer generations different types of leaders standing up, and I think that's super inspiring because they really live up to the open door policy, where they say my door is open, but the door is actually open if there already is even a door. a lot of times you see they sit between their people, they are actively involved, they know what's happening without micromanaging. And they talk to everybody, and they love to get mentored as well by people coming from different backgrounds. They love to be mentored by the interns. So all of these things, I think, are a really very cool development to see. And they invest in themselves. So they invest in learning on the go, and not just in how can I become the best CEO in terms of strategy, but also a lot of on soft skills.
Yeah. I think probably the founders or slash organizations and sort of HR leaders that you see a lot or hear a lot about are those kinds of people. I'm thinking of very specific people, won't mention names now, but I do think the people that you come by on LinkedIn quite a lot, for me at least, are those kinds of people who door open, very open about exactly their mistakes, what they do right and wrong, owning that and being open to learn. It's a really, for me, a very hopeful development sort of for any D&I agenda. I do think that it takes a certain kind of person, and maybe I'm wrong and you can correct me on that, but I do think that sort of leadership style is born out of either experiencing it yourself or having seen people with less privilege to be able to empathize. Because I think a lot of the inclusive leadership comes from empathy. Do you think that is a correct assessment, or am I wrong here?
Yeah, I think you are very right. It starts with empathy. And empathy is also something difficult. It's not very tangible, because but you can train it. So you can work on your empathy, and you can grow in building empathy. But that starts with being open to it and being vulnerable, saying, listen, I am sometimes not aware of what's happening. So when you talk to somebody and they are not aware of an energy that's in a room, or an energy that oozes out of certain people, some people are just a little bit blind for it. So it doesn't mean they can't train it, but it is almost like training for a marathon or training as a professional soccer player. And I use that metaphor quite a lot when I speak I say, listen, the best football players in the world also still train on a daily basis, right? They didn't become the best just overnight. They didn't wake up one morning and they were like Messi. No, they trained. They were already talented, but they trained and they trained and they keep on training to become the best and to stay the best. And I think it's the same as a leader. If you want to become the best leader for your squad, you need to continuously train on how to be that best leader. And also be open and honest enough if people tell you, hey, these are things that you can really improve on, which can be quite harsh, right? Quite direct. But don't feel attacked, because I think if people feel safe enough to have that conversation, it's one of the biggest compliments you can have as a leader. If they feel safe with you to give you good feedback, and you also do something, obviously, with the feedback, that only means that you're building up on something amazing.
Yeah, and that is obviously true on all levels of an organization. You don't need to be the CEO for this to apply to you. You can lead a recruitment team, be what have you, the head of...
It's even if you have an intern, if you have one intern, and I think leaders come in all different sizes, right? You don't have to have the title manager or whatever next to your name. I think there's a leader in almost everybody. Sometimes you're leading in a project, sometimes you're leading within your own team or squad. So this applies to everybody, but I think it applies even heavily more to the people who actually have those C and D and leader and management titles.
Indeed. Yes. Yeah. Well, on the topic, little birdie told me that you are a keynote speaker. You do consult companies on their D&I strategy. I would love to hear a little bit more about the company and consultancy that you just launched, House of Inclusion. Where did that come from? What are you guys doing? Tell me all about it.
Wow. So House of Inclusion has been born out of growing demands of questions that me and Dani, so that I'm building House of Inclusion together with Danielle Giscoat. And both of us come from a sort of a similar background, but also quite different. So where I come more from technology scale-up industry, Dani comes more from the entertainment and media world. And we saw in both of the industries, but honestly in all industries, a growing demand of companies needing help. Across the board when it comes to building future-proof culture. So just saying diversity, equity, and inclusion doesn't even cover it. It's really about how do we make sure we are ready for what's coming. And now they're starting to see like, hey, the market's changing, right? So it's become tougher and tougher to keep the good people in-house. AI is rising, and there's also a big group of people leaving the market because they are going on retirement. So there's a lot happening, but also building safe workplaces has become, I think, one of the most important things over the past years. And especially companies that have not really paid attention to it that much are now need to catch up. The CSRD is around the corner, so corporate social responsibility. There's a lot on their shoulders, and the momentum is now. So we wanted to build a house. So it's a little reference to, I don't know if you know, but a little reference to the ballroom industry from the 80s, where the people that were not welcome in certain communities created their own houses where everybody was welcome. So with House of Inclusion, everybody is welcome. We work for different kinds of businesses. So it's, we have some really amazing corporates that are vulnerable enough to say like, hey, listen, we also don't know what to do. We are short on resources, but also short on expertise. And we also give advice to smaller agencies. And we believe that there's two ways to make impact and to spark empathy, as we talked about earlier. So you have quick empathy sparks, which is needed to build longer business cases. So with quick empathy, we do keynotes and workshops. So we fly in, we shake everybody up, and we fly out, which is a good way, especially for HR and people leaders, to put the subject more on the roadmap. If you want to have it as a strategic agenda point, but you're like, I already asked my CEO 5,000 times. They don't seem to listen. Maybe they will listen to you. And it works. It does work. A lot of times it works. And after that, the floor is more open to have a conversation about, okay, how are we really going to make this a strategic ongoing thing on our agenda as a business? And then we build long-term advisory cases. And that's every time a major measure solution, because every company is different.
Yeah.
So we start with the baseline. We want to know, where are the blind spots? What does the data tell us? And from there, we build an advisory business case for companies.
And this sits really at the sort of at the full spectrum of the employee lifecycle. Do you have sort of a preferred space that you operate in with your recruitment background, or you sort of it touches everything? D&I touches the employee in every stage, and we need to see where the blind spots are. How do you approach that?
Yeah, it's exactly what I said. It's different. So my background obviously is more on the employee side. Dani's background is a bit more on the communication, product and marketing side. Therefore, we already make a very, interesting combination. But we also believe not all knowledge is with us. So we know, I think, quite a lot. We really believe in democratizing knowledge. There's a lot of knowledge spread out. And there's a lot of companies doing amazing things, also like EqualShare, and that people don't know about. But we are not a software house. So if this is a solution that's going to help our clients, we want to bring it together. So we really believe in partnering with a lot of businesses that have the same vision and mission and that share the values. So we can build those inclusive cultures more together. And it's what you say. It touches everything. It touches suppliers. It touches how you build your products or your services, and are they accessible for everybody? So it's not just recruitment. Of course, we've been really focusing on the recruitment and the employee processes in this talk. But obviously, it touches everything within a company.
Yeah, which also strengthens then again a little bit that business case around why D&I is so important for organizations, because it doesn't only touch recruitment, it doesn't only touch the employee, it also touches, as you say, external communications, employer branding, what have you, sort of a very holistic way to look at it. So I can only imagine that the companies can really benefit from what you guys are doing over there to make sure that everything's being taken care of. It's just not one sort of, we're putting out the fire over here and then we're going to go. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a marathon, and it's something you continuously will need to work on. And we are there to get people started and get structure in how are you going to do this on your own. But it is going to be in a continuous thing for the rest of the time that you're going to be in business.
Yeah. Which, I always see it as sort of a blessing and a curse. Obviously, we all would love for us to be out of jobs so that everyone can be treated equal and have fair chances on the labor market. But
I would love that.
Yeah, indeed. That's why I'm saying it. Sort of, it would be great if we all went out of business. That means that our job is done and we've achieved our mission. Not the case.
Yeah, I hope we get to live to see that. Yeah. I wonder, but there's definitely a lot of amazing things happening, and I love to see so many companies being honest and vulnerable and open for collaborations and open for constructive feedback on how they have been doing and how they can do so much more and so much better.
Yeah. Well, my last question is around best practices that you can share with recruiters, with the head of recruitment who are listening now. We get a lot of, I talk to a lot of people who say, well, it's all well and good that there's lots of services out there, lots of tools that you can use, assessments, what have you, but we might not have the budget right now. So is there anything that recruiters can start now, implement tomorrow, those little steps to become a more D&I-informed team in their processes?
Of course, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. First of all, I think there's always budgets, maybe not the budget that you want. But that's why I said build a smaller business case first. And getting 1,000 or 2,000 euros budget for something or a really good speaker or a really good workshop, that's not going to get the company bankrupt, right? So again, tap into your inner bravery, boldness, and ask like, hey, I know we don't have budget on this yet, but I want to showcase how important it is and also make sure that I can build a bigger business case for next year. To start with something. So if we can go out for a Friday night with the company, which is also going to cost a lot, we can also do this. Mm. So a lot of times I just say start there. And I think small things that recruiters can do is step into these types of sessions because this is for free, right? We talk for free to educate you and share what you've heard internally as well. Mm. So I know there's a lot of good webinars and a lot of information and a lot of good white papers. Don't just read it and then, you know, leave it on your laptop. Just ask like, hey, I read this super interesting webinar, or I attended this interesting broadcasting, or I downloaded a super interesting white paper. I'm going to share it with my team. Mm. And during lunch, I'm just going to grab 10 minutes to talk about the three most important things that stuck out for me. So it becomes also more tangible for the rest of the people in your company, and get allies, get other people to talk about this with you. Mm. Because if it's just you, it can feel very lonely, but I can guarantee there's more people who get frustrated because they see what's happening with other companies. They feel like, hey, why aren't we doing anything, or why aren't we doing enough? Talk about it with each other, right? And find allies amongst each other. Say like, hey, this is something that frustrates me for a while now. You will see other people will say, oh, I have the same. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you can build a little alliance and say, hey, how can we maybe, you know, join forces and get some more attention for this? Because if it's coming from three or four people, it's already it has a different layer than if it's just one.
Yeah.
So don't feel alone. There's always people that have your back. You just don't know it yet. That's a lot of times, I think, very helpful. So without budgets, I think those are first good steps to take. And there's also, I know, and that's also how I started. There's also people that know more about this topic that want to share their knowledge within your company in exchange for exposure. So even if you're like, okay, I want to have this amazing speaker, but a good speaker is already quite an investment. There's also people that are just starting or are just already intrinsically motivated. Invite them and say, be honest, say like, listen, we don't have budget, but we do have a great network. We're happy to expose you and share, your knowledge and our session with our bigger network, in exchange for some knowledge and some inspiration. So those are, I think, the little small things that you can start with. But I also, want to circle back to the first point. I think getting 1,000 or 2,000 euros to really start, and with that, you can do quite a lot. Is not going to get the company bankrupt. So just be bold and ask for it.
Yeah, indeed. There might be a bit of reluctance in asking, being bold. But it's a really nice piece of advice that you're sharing and saying, well, on the one hand, start with yourself, sort of see how you can educate yourself, and then be that echo that reverberates in your company and tell other people what you're learning and who you're meeting. I think that network effect can go such a long way if you speak to people who are more experienced in the things that you would like to do. Think people that have implemented policies or have done certain things that have worked for them. Speak to those. So I think those are great pieces of advice that you just shared.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and obviously I could give you so much more advice. But I think for starters, these are good things for people to start with. And if people want to know more or get inspired, I also highly recommend. There's a lot of people talking about these topics on a daily basis, including us at House of Inclusion. We said we're going to just share inspirational things that hopefully open up the conversation within your company. So like, hey, did you know this or did you know that? Or wait, you know what I saw today? Yeah, as little sparks of empathy.
Yeah.
So if you want to know more and you're interested in this topic, and sometimes you need some inspiration to open a conversation, I highly recommend follow us on LinkedIn, because we share already like a lot of a ton of information and inspiration.
Great. Yeah, I will leave I'll leave all of the links to House of Inclusion and to you on LinkedIn as well in the show notes so everyone can go see what you guys are up to and learn from you guys. Thank you so much for joining me on this LinkedIn, TA Leaders Live series. I'm super excited to have been able to talk to you about all those things. And we'll send everyone who listened today over to you guys. And I hope you enjoyed it.
Yay, it was great. Yeah, I feel like we can talk for another 10 or 15 minutes, but let's be considerate of everybody's time.
Indeed.
And also our own time. So thank you so much, and I hope to see you soon.
Yeah, speak to you soon, and thank you for everyone who listened today. I hope to see you in the next one. Bye.
Bye.